Well, it's time for Changing Australia today. And just a bit of a warning for you that this next story may be confronting for some listeners. It's a phrase you've heard many times over the years, that Australia is a great sporting nation, but there is a darker side to some contact sports and the potential risk to athletes from head knocks. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy is a degenerative brain condition that can cause problems with memory, as well as personality, behavioural changes, including aggression and depression. The issue isn't just confined to sport. There are also growing concerns for some in the defence forces and also for victims of domestic violence. Associate Professor Michael Buckland is a neuropathologist and founder of the Australian Sports Brain Bank, working to uncover more about this disease. Michael, welcome to Changing Australia on Breakfast.
Oh, thanks very much, Sally, for having me on.
And we're also joined this morning by Amanda Green. Amanda is the wife of late Paul Green, an NRL player and coach with a decorated career, who after his death was found to have CTE. Amanda, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sally.
Michael, just to begin with, we need the basics here. What is CTE and what do we know about it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So CTE, as you said, is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It's a degenerative brain disease whose only known cause is exposure to repeated head impacts. We've actually known about it for around 100 years. It was first described in boxes in 1928. And for much of this last 100 years, we thought it was something that was a bit of a historical anecdote and confined to boxes. And it was really only in 2005 where a case was published in an ex-professional American footballer that we started to work out that, in fact, modern contact sports also lead to a risk of developing this disease.
And you're the founder of the Australian Sports Brain Bank. In terms of getting a definitive diagnosis of CTE, why is the brain so important of those people who have later died?
Yes, look, at this stage, there are no validated diagnostic criteria for a diagnosis during life. And the symptoms of CTE overlap a lot, either with mental health symptoms or in older people with Alzheimer's disease symptoms. So the only way to reach a definitive diagnosis is to look at the brain after death. And there's a technical definition of CTE which relies on how it looks like under the microscope.
Amanda Green, many listeners will fondly remember your husband Paul as an NRL player and coach. He had a decorated career and took his Cowboys to their maiden premiership in 2015. Yeah. Yeah. But it's really important for people to know that, of course, there was much more to your Paul as well as a husband and father. But he studied the violin. He was into the violin, and he went to Harvard Business School as well, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. He was an amazing man with just an incredible mind that really did enable him to achieve so much. Like you said, he had a helicopter license. When he first left school, he got his commercial pilot's license. He was an incredible violinist. He played the piano. In his early coaching career, he studied science at the University of Queensland. Yes, and he went to Harvard Business School. He really did have an incredible mind. And, yeah, in his mind, anything was possible. He just had an incredible belief that, just inspired me every day.
I can still hear you're relaying the passion that Paul had for so many things.
For so many things, for life in general, he was, inspiring.
When you look back now, Amanda, what do you think was the moment? It's hard often to pinpoint. Yeah. When did you start to see Paul's behaviour change? Sometimes we see things in the people that we love and we kind of push them away. But when did you start to think something's really not right here for Paul?
Yeah, it was a hard one because he did work in such a high-pressure environment, and many of the changes I began to see in Paul, they would be changes you'd expect for someone who was working in that type of environment and under the pressure he was. But I did notice he wasn't handling that pressure as well as he had in the past. He'd eaten up pressure. He loved it. He thrived on it. But he just wasn't handling it as well. And there were most of his changes were behavioural type changes. Like he had lost some patience. His tolerance was lower. He became quite impulsive with his decision making. He'd also mentioned leading up to his death he was feeling quite anxious and just couldn't understand why he had this anxiety. And, you know, just lost his general sparkle around, really.
That can be incredibly distressing for a spouse, a partner, for kids and others to see the person that they love kind of, there's almost a grief to those little bits and pieces when they're not who they've been for the lifetime that you've known them.
Yeah, absolutely. It was devastating. I could see that he wasn't the man I had married, that there were changes and he wasn't handling things, but just couldn't put my finger on what it was. And with him, and I think it did come down to working in that high-pressure environment. We put so much down to that. But there wasn't any one thing that I thought, oh, we really need to get help here. Because I thought that he was doing okay in general.
A bit of an impossible question, Amanda. Do you have any idea how many head knocks that Paul might have received in his rugby league career or elsewhere?
Oh, no, I don't. But there was many, and you know, he quite often talked about games that he just didn't remember the game. He'd gone back on after suffering a head knock, and the next day just couldn't remember the game. I'd hate to think how many head knocks he actually did have. He also had major surgery that ended his career. He took a knee to the head and he broke his eye socket, cheekbone and jaw, which required major intensive surgery and was in intensive care. So just never went back after that. Thank goodness.
And Amanda, we know, unfortunately, that the pressure and stress and the changes that Paul was experiencing, they culminated in Paul's death.
Yes.
And at that time, after Paul's death, Michael Buckland, you made a phone call to Amanda. Can you tell me about that?
Michael or myself?
Michael, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yes. So I actually spoke first to to Lisa, who was Paul's sister, and then after that spoke with Amanda. Those phone calls are never easy to make, particularly obviously the family is in a great deal of emotional distress and there's a lot of grief. However, I really do think they are very important to make, so the family have the opportunity to consider having the brain examined for CTE. I was very lucky that both Lisa and Amanda were receptive, and while they hadn't heard of CTE before, I think as we continued the conversation, some pennies started to drop and got a very positive yes, please.
Amanda, what was it like for you to talk to Michael at that time, so soon after your husband's death?
To be honest, I'll be forever grateful to Michael for making that call. If Michael hadn't reached out that day, we would never have thought to donate Paul's brain and get the answers that we now have. So to have those answers is everything. And it's actually devastating to think that there could be families out there who have lost loved ones in very similar circumstances to us and never got that opportunity. We were just so lucky that Paul had that bit of a public profile and Michael had heard that Paul had passed and made that phone call. So, yeah, to get those answers were everything.
Michael, when you examined Paul's brain, what story did it tell you?
Oh, look, with Paul's brain and with others, I'm often surprised how easy it is to find disease. Paul had quite a significant burden of disease in his brain. It was not hard to find. I found it in the first couple of slides I put under the microscope. And it's remarkable as well. Sometimes I end with Paul, you think, how is this person functioning with this level of disease? It is quite remarkable. And I think as we've heard from Amanda, Paul had an amazing mind, and it seems the more cognitive reserve you have, then the more the more damage you can put up with before the signs and symptoms really show.
Amanda, what was it like for you and your family getting this news from Michael that it was CTE?
Yeah, to be honest, it was everything. What happened that day was so left field, so out of the blue. So for the kids and I to get those answers, it allowed us to somewhat process what happened and to understand Paul was living with a very extensive and severe brain disease. We just didn't know it at the time.
Hmm. How did you then process that information and look back on all those incidents and the change that you'd observed with Paul?
Well, everything just started to make sense. You know, you could look back and understand that, you know, there were changes and all those changes were due to this disease, this terrible disease.
Mm. Michael, what's it like sometimes if you make these calls, if families are grieving, if it's been a very traumatic situation, if someone has taken their own life, for example, do families ever tell you they don't want to deal with you?
Oh, look, I think I've been very lucky. I've certainly had families that just shut it down and said, look, we're not interested. Mm. And that's completely fine. At least they've been given the option. And in that time, people are not necessarily themselves. It can bring out the worst in people. Mm. Where I work, there's a park across the road, and usually I do a few laps around the park before I get up enough courage to place the call. But I would say over half of the families respond very positively and end up donating the brain.
How many brains have been donated to this bank so far, Michael?
So far we've got just over 150 brains, and we're just finishing the data analysis on the first 100 brains that we've completed the examination on. And it looks like we're sitting at a CTE diagnosis rate of around 50%.
And it's important for us to note as well, I mean, we're talking about sport here, but as I was saying in the introduction, it can be from other things. People can have head injuries from car accidents, from working on outback properties, people in the military from having that concussion effect from being near explosives and artillery and other things as well, Michael.
Yes, it's the repetitive nature of the impacts that seem to be very important in CTE. So people can obviously have terrible brain injuries from car accidents or other accidents. Typically they end up with a fixed deficit, and they, after the injury, they are profoundly affected, and then over a relatively long period of time they can recover somewhat to end up with, you know, some residual deficit. Whereas CTE is very different in that the typical story is someone will retire from, say, a sporting career and they're normal, they're fine. Then after some period of time, which might be just a couple of years, it might be 10, even 20 years, then there's this insidious onset of these symptoms, which are usually progressive and increasingly debilitating.
Amanda, what's all this meant for you to get some answers? When someone that we love changes, it's really tough in the moment, but also later trying to figure out how to remember them in the long term. Do you remember them when they're changed, or do you forget that time and remember them as they were previously? To get those answers, how much value did that have for you in understanding the man that you'd lost?
Oh, it was, those answers were everything. Like I said before, it helped us understand that Paul was living with a terrible disease that took him away from us. But yeah, we remember the good times. Yeah, Paul left us with the most amazing memories. We just, you know, had a wonderful life, and we'll never forget those memories that he left us and the wonderful person that he was. We were just, you know, so blessed to be able to call him our husband and my kid's father. So, yeah, we'll never forget him and the amazing person he was.
Amanda, I want to thank you. It's not an easy thing to talk about, but you've articulated some of that experience and just painted this vibrant picture of Paul in all his brilliance and complexities as well. Thank you very much for being my guest this morning.
Oh, no worries at all. And thank you for having us. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to raise awareness about this terrible disease and help anyone else out there that may be suffering in silence, that, you know, there is help out there and don't give up.
Amanda Green was the wife of Paul Green, who was involved heavily in rugby league. Paul Green died in 2022 and was later diagnosed with CTE. Amanda Green is now an ambassador for the Brain Bank. And also, a big thank you to you, Michael Buckland. Thank you very much for joining us on Changing Australia this morning.
Thanks very much, Sally.
Associate Professor Michael Buckland is founder and executive director of the Australian Sports Brain Bank. There was a lot in that conversation. If it's raised any issues for you, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 and you can also call the Suicide Callback Service. That's 1300 659 467.